speaking is the number one lead generator and sales tool on the planet. If you can open your mouth and you can articulate a message in a specific way, you will make money.
What's the number one thing that you've recognized to be most common with six-figure earners to seven-figure earners?
It's all mindset. It's not strategy. Poor people believe that money is used just to pay their bills. Wealthy people understand that money is a transactional energy and it's designed to be used to create more money. You help people get what they want, you're going to get what you want. If I focus on showing up and serving, there is no way in the world that God would have me out here and I not be experiencing the wealth and abundance.
Dr. Harmon is in the house. Before we went live, there we go. Woo, let's go.
Yes.
So enough people do not know you and they are learning who you are very quickly. You have a multi-million-dollar business and you believe and your clients believe that if somebody's looking to start and scale to a seven-figure business, you are the person to go to and you are on the podcast train is what I like to say, right? You're getting on shows, you're putting content out there, you're a speaker, you're an author. But I'm curious in terms of the last 12 months, what has things looked like for you in your life and business and how that's been different for you versus, let's say, maybe 10 years ago?
That's a great question. So the last 12 months have been a roller coaster of sorts. So, you know, when 2023 was over and people would ask me, how was the year for you? This is what I would say to them, Tyler. I would tell them I got banked. I feel like 2023 banked me. And, you know, some of you guys are going to know that colloquialism, like being banked is like multiple people jump on you in order to bring you harm. That's how I felt about 2023. There were high highs, and then there were low lows. Some of the high highs were, you know, we released our book. Move to Millions, the proven framework to become a million-dollar CEO with grace and ease instead of hustle and grind. And it was met with amazing reception. We sold 5,500 copies the first week. We have sold over 10,000 copies in 3 months. That was a high, high. And it was also a low, low. And here's why. My team spent a lot of time and energy promoting this book. The book, you know, was $23.95. Now, you know, I'm a business consultant. We work with entrepreneurs and small business owners that want to make millions of dollars in their business. And our coaching programs would be considered high end. And we spent a lot of energy pushing a $23.95 book. And I was not self-published. My book was published through a publisher. So I don't even get all of that $23.95. So there's a lot of work. And I'm glad you asked this question. And for those of you who are listening, if you endeavor to write a book, if you've never heard this before, a book is an expensive business card. Will it make you money? Sure. Will it make you wealthy? No, absolutely not. I wouldn't have changed it though. I'm glad I did it. It was an amazing experience. I wrote a book that is stellar. It is the book I was born to write. And that's why it was part of the highest highs and the lowest lows. Some of the other things that happened in 2023 did that flowered me saying I felt like I got banked in the year is I had a lot of shifting and transitioning happening in the clients that I serve. And I think sometimes if you're not paying attention and you're not reading the signs, you can miss major opportunities. And for me specifically, we retired programs that we just weren't feeling called and aligned to anymore. And then we created new programs and not all of them were a hit, right? And that's business. Sometimes that happens that, you know, probably made it a little bit more challenging. And even though all of that happened, we still grew our business in 2023, right? We still had a multiple seven-figure year. We had a few employees. That was another thing. We had a few employees who transitioned out of the company, some on their own and some because we asked them to leave, right? Business. All of that plays into who we are and the work that we get to do out in the world. And I think it's important to say right here, right now that, you know, business is not all rainbows and bow ties all day, every day. if you're the CEO of your own company and you're truly the CEO, you're going to have to make some CEO decisions that others may not think are favorable. You're going to have to weigh the facts and the data that you're presented with in order to be able to consistently steward your company in a way that is going to produce something you can be proud of and honored to call yours when it's all said and done. And even though we experienced high highs and low lows in 2023, I am a better CEO than I've ever been. And the company that I run is better positioned to truly continue to transform the lives of others more so than it's ever been. And it would not have been possible if we didn't experience those high highs and those low lows.
What's the number one thing that you've recognized to be most common with six-figure earners to seven-figure earners? Like, what's the number one thing people need to do to break through making six figures to seven figures?
And this may be surprising to some people. It's all mindset. It's not strategy. All the strategies work. You want to do low ticket, you want to do high ticket, you want to do memberships, you want to do certifications and licensing, you want to do live events, you want to do webinars. They all work. Every single one of them, they work. It's not the strategy. Now, what a six-figure entrepreneur thinks is that they just need to get that magic pill. If they could learn the strategy, then all of their problems would be solved and they'd be making a lot more money. It's actually all mindset. It's the way they see themselves, the way they show up. It's the way they look at money. It's the way they make decisions. It's the way that they invest. And all of that is based on an innate need to feel like they matter and to feel safe and secure. And the things that show up that threaten that. So fear, overwhelm, doubt, confusion, unforgiveness all threaten your safety and security. And it is only when you are experiencing safety and security that you can truly embody the version of yourself that can call all of those things into your life experience. But they don't get that. They think they just need to learn how to do challenges. Or if they could just learn how to build a sales funnel, or if they could just learn how to set up some Facebook ads, then they would make the big time. And that's actually not what it is. Because even if you learn how to build a funnel, how to set up Facebook ads, or how to do a webinar, but your come from is one of lack, then it ain't gonna produce what it is that you want.
Paul, what would you say is the biggest opportunity in business in the next couple of years for online entrepreneurs, for people that are maybe not online, that are business owners? Like, what do you think is the number one opportunity over, let's say, the next 2 years in business?
Number one opportunity, I believe, just based on the way that the market is recalibrating. So a lot of people are saying the market is changing. The market is actually not changing. What's happening is we're recalibrating to the pre-COVID marketplace. So pre-COVID, the entrepreneur or the consumer was, they were discerning, they were taking their time. Sales cycles and buyer patterns and psychology was different. Then COVID happened. We experienced this massive disruption. And in a panic, in fear, people started to do things that were counterintuitive and counterproductive to who they actually are. And we got away with it. We were in a marketplace during COVID where you could be marketing a charlatan and make a lot of money, right? If you were in the right place at the right time saying what appeared to be the right thing, you could be well paid. Well, we're out of COVID now. We're recalibrating to how the consumer's always been, right? And because of that, people are thinking things are different because they can't ride the gravy train of mediocrity in business anymore. Instead, they have to actually demonstrate expertise and show up with consistency in order to get new clients, right? So I think the biggest thing that we need to do or that we need to be focused on over the next 2 years is heightening our consistency, hunkering down, getting very clear about the problem that you solve, the problem that you have been successful at solving for those who have been unsuccessful of solving it on their own. Hunker down on it and find unique ways to express and exploit that problem. One of the things we teach our clients, we spend a lot of time in messaging because messaging is how you get known. Only once you're known will you get found and then ultimately paid. And so the bulk of your energy has to be spent on getting known. And the way we get known is by showing up consistently with our message in the places where our ideal client is gathering so that they can find it. And so what that means is that your content And regardless of where you're delivering it, whether you're offline, online, social media, networking, referrals, regardless of where you're disseminating this content, there has to be a mechanism of consistency. And you have to broach the problem that your clients have that you can solve from every angle. Because it is taking, on average, the consumption of 7 hours of your content before they're ready to take the next step. And we're in the day and age of shorts and short form content. Do you know how many pieces of content that is if we're doing 60 seconds at a time? That's a lot of content. And if you're not showing up consistently, then you're not going to be there when they're finally ready and at a heightened state to solve that problem. And they're going to choose your competitor because they've been consistent. So the biggest thing that we need to do is we just need to hunker down on the consistency of the message that we know speaks to the client we want to serve. Now, it could take up to 90 days for you to know that your message is one that will get consistent traction. Because you could have a fluke, right? You could post something out there and see immediate traction and then it wane. And you could post something out there and get crickets and then it get traction. So it's going to take the consistency of at least 90 days to be able to validate that the message that you are articulating is the one for whom your ideal client is seeking a solution, so that you know where to, you know, put a stake in the ground and really go deep on that particular thing in order to produce the result, which ultimately is clients to serve, so that you can continue to elevate and grow.
What would the example be for you? Like, I mean, in short, really what you're saying is like, yo, Tyler, people need to know who you are, right? Because you can't sell and monetize anything unless people know you, right? So a lot of people always bring it down to three things: know, like, and trust.
Right.
So well, they can't trust or like you if they don't know you.
Right.
And what you're saying is, you know, which is at this point very obvious in terms of like where the world is at. Like, if you're just not putting stuff out online, whether through podcast, YouTube, TikTok, Facebook, if you're not online with an online presence, email list, text campaigns, Facebook ads, YouTube, you know, if you're not doing things online, then that's like step number one. But what you're saying as well is your messaging needs to be solving a particular problem and or set of problems. And sales 101 is you are talking to the wrong people and or saying the wrong things. So people that you're talking to, better be the right people, better be the qualified people,
right?
Audience, and you better be saying the right things to solve those problems. So can you maybe give me an example for you? Like, what's, and I'm sure there's many ways that you're getting qualified leads in and then sales process to close in, but what does that look like for you? Can you give me like a simple explanation where people that are executive business coaches are maybe dropping the ball that you're executing at a very high level right now?
Yeah, I mean, so there's a couple of things that come to mind. First and foremost, you know, I spent a lot of time really honing in on the segment of the market that we desire to serve and what their problems are. And so there has to be market research, and that market research needs to be both primary and secondary. And so primary research is going right to the source. So existing clients that we've had, previous clients that we've had, doing focus groups with them, checking in with them, seeing where they are on what we call the move to millions continuum, which is the growth scale to have a business that scales to and sustains $1 million or more per year, right? So understanding everything that happens at every leg on the continuum and getting direct from the quote unquote horse's mouth revelation of what they are saying to themselves and what they are desiring so that they can get it. So when I wrote my book, as an example, I wrote the book to the client that we serve.
Who's the client?
Yeah. So the client that we serve is a client that is generating at least $300,000 a year. So they're in the ballpark of seven figures. Our sweet spot client is around $500,000 a year. They have repeated that level for multiple years. So for 2 to 3 years, they have done that. Their money set point has been $300,000 to $500,000. So they don't even know what they need to do differently in order to elevate to get beyond seven figures in a way that is both profitable and sustainable without them having to hustle and grind to do it. And so as I look at that and what I articulate in the marketplace, and we are, you know, we are online. I do also get on a fair amount of stages a year. So I'm also meeting people where they are. I love a person that comes into proximity with me because the impact is felt even greater than what I can portray in a social media post or a 60-second reel. And I am hammering in on what the challenges tend to be. Now, here's what we also know. The $300,000 to $500,000 business owner thinks that they just need to learn how to build a better mousetrap. They think that they just need another strategy, that the strategy that they have isn't working. No, the strategy is fine. That's how they got to 300 to 500,000. What they need is an up-leveling. They need to embody and become the CEO in advance. There is a way that you have to think and move and reason and process that will allow you to, quote unquote, walk into a $1 million business without much more effort than you're expending right now. So one of the things that I say often, Tyler, is effort won't make you millions. Embodiment will. And so it's a leadership play to go from 300,000 to 500,000 to 1.2, 1.5, 3.5. And so we're spending our time and energy and our capital in the marketplace identifying the problems that you must have and the way you see the problem and showing you what that problem is really an indication of and why it's impacting your business from getting to the $1 million mark. Because what I know is when I look at a cross section of clients, right? Like in 2023, we served 150 clients directly through our programs. And when I look at that 150 clients that we served, each of those clients at the day they enrolled in whichever one of our programs they enrolled in had a $1 million business. It just wasn't packaged or positioned correctly. And they were not presiding over it as if they were a $1 million CEO. And so the amount of time it takes for them to step fully into the embodiment of each of those things, it varies per business owner, right? They all see growth over the continuum and a portion of them are willing to do the work internally, the internal shifts that produce the external result to get to the $1 million mark in a year. And so we spend our time, you know, every day. I believe you market every day you want to make money. So every day we're marketing. Every day we're having sales conversations. Every day we're introducing a problem and a solution in the marketplace. And the way that shows up per platform is different, but every day we are there. Every day we are seeing people come into our ecosystem. Every day we're creating opportunities to move a lead to become a qualified lead, to become a prospect, to become a paying client. Because we have dialed in what their problems are in such a way that we can articulate it better than they can. And because we can do that, they see us as the obvious solution. We must have the answer if we can communicate with confidence and effectiveness what the problem really is.
And how are you getting on stages to do public speaking? It's much easier said than done. People fear public speaking more than they do death.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
they come back. What you mentioned, right? Like understanding when it comes to creating content and putting things out online and or on stage, it's really what you had mentioned, right? Mindset, message, the method that you're going to go about that, and then ultimate monetization. And what I've discovered over the years is and you're saying this as well, like the message, right? Like making sure that you and your business and your message is aligned to solve these certain things. But I'm curious, how are you getting on? How are you landing speaking gigs for those that, you know, have a great message to share and they may have good systems or processes in place to put content out online? I think it's funny how like doing public speaking on stages at events, like that was like normal 10, 20 years ago. And getting those people that were successful at that online was like the hard part to do. Now it's getting people online that can speak on YouTube or speak on podcast shows. Like, how do we get those people on stages to speak on stage in person, which in my personal opinion is a whole different dynamic?
Oh, it is. It is. And it's my favorite dynamic. It's, you know, speaking is the number one lead generator and sales tool on the planet. If you can open your mouth and you can articulate a message in a specific way, you will make money, right? Like just will. How do we get on stages? So it happens both ways. We have people who come to us. You know, I'm not new to this. I'm true to this. I've been out in these streets online and offline for the better part of 16 years. And I am a powerful orator. If you give me a microphone, I will transform a room. And so that legacy, it leads, like it goes before me, right? So we get a lot of opportunities where people reach out to us to book us to speak. We probably get on a weekly basis, we probably get 5 to 10 inquiries into, do we have the dates available to speak at an event? We, of course, have built a system. And then we also outreach. So we pitch, right? We go out to, when we see new events popping up where our ideal client is going to be, we're pitching ourselves. We've got, you know, I've got all of my speaker assets ready to go at whim, and we are shooting them out there. We also, of course, are, in addition, getting ourselves on podcasts, right? That's a form of speaking. And the best thing about podcasts, I mean, of course, some people are doing live in person. I mean, there are some podcasts I'm coming up on that I'm going to get on a plane and go physically be in studio with. But you can do that from the comfort of your home, right? If it's true, and I believe that it is, that it's going to take on average your ideal client first to find you, right? So you have to be talking about what you talk about consistently enough for when I go Googling it, you come up in search early enough in search for me to actually potentially land on your page. And then you also have to cross-reference, like who's already gathering those people together that if you just either got on their stage or got on their show or whatever, you would create an opportunity for those people to seek you out and get into your ecosystem. And then there's also the times, Tyler, where I am paying to get on stage. Like I will use marketing budget to be on the right stage. If that is the way to get in front of my ideal client, they're highly invested in that event. The event is not an event with a like I wouldn't do that for another business coach's event. I wouldn't do that because 9 times out of 10, the people that are at that event, they came to that event because they're auditioning that business coach. So the likelihood that I'm going to walk away with clients, you know, might be limited. But so we strategically pick the type of events where we will look at sponsorship opportunities that include a speaking slot.
Where are you finding those? Like, is it just like you going through like Instagram? Are you looking up like local events that are popping up as well?
We do both. We have a database that we search, and I cannot tell you the name of it. You know, I tell everyone, I just work here. I'm the CEO. I have people. And the people do the things, but we do have a database that has every event that happens in, I think it's actually in the world, not even just in the US, in there. So we can go and we can find the information. We look at the dates. Like I look at, like if I'm already going to a city for a certain date, what are the things that are happening in that city while I'm there? Could I piggyback? Could I say, hey, I'm already coming to Denver and you're having an event. I could speak on your stage if it's a paid opportunity. And instead of you paying, you know, my $15,000 keynote fee plus travel and lodging, because I'm already going to be there, I'd be willing to piggyback an event for $10,000 or whatever the case might be, right? So I can make an additional $10,000 plus I can position myself to that audience to walk out of that room or within weeks from walking out of that room to generate $200,000 or $300,000 in addition to what I got to be on, to pay to be on that stage without ever selling from that stage. And that's something you have to learn. It is a skill, right? I have a course that I teach where I teach the power of speaking and the business of speaking so people can learn how to turn their speaking into the best lead generator and sales tool on the planet, right? Because we've been doing this for years. I got promoted in corporate America. I was working at a Fortune 500 financial services company and I was a personal banking officer. I had just gotten promoted. They asked me to present at the next officer meeting. The CEO of the company happened to attend that particular officer meeting. I did my talk. After my talk was over, he basically bum rushed me and I got promoted. I became a spokesperson for the company based on my ability to orate, to speak from the stage. So it is part skill. And for me, it's also natural talent, but you can be taught how to engineer a talk in a way so that it leads to, you know what I mean?
What's like a good outline you like to follow?
So there are 13 elements that have to happen inside of your talk in order for it to be effective. And I'm going to just be honest and transparent. I'm going off the top of my head, so I'm not going to be able to give you all 13. But
what would you say maybe like the three big ones?
That's what I was just about to say. Let me give you the most important. Yeah. So the most important is your positioning. And there are five things you need to position. You need to position yourself. You need to position your audience. You need to position your topic. You need to position your solution, and you need to position your offer.
And then what would you say like is a good way to do that? Is that like you come in on stage?
That
like how would you position those five things?
Yeah. So, you know, I'm so excited to be here. Thank you to whoever, you know, brought me here. Before we jump in today, I believe that whenever you first meet someone, you should introduce yourself. So I'd love to take just a quick minute and tell you a little bit about me. I'm going to tell a quick story, and I'm going to distinctly make sure I recount three moments. I'm going to recount what I call a Robert Frost moment based on his poem, The Road Less Traveled By. Two roads diverge in a wood, and I took the road less traveled, and that has made all the difference. So you want to share a defining moment. Then the second moment is what I call the Sam Cooke moment based on the singer from the 60s. A change is going to come. What is the change that you experience that now makes you the expert to stand on this stage and talk to these people about the thing? And then the final moment is the Harriet Tubman moment. What is the moment at which you got to quote unquote freedom? You solved this problem and you looked around and realized you didn't have enough people being free with you so that you were willing to go back into their slavery, their bondage, and bring them the freedom. So I'm going to quickly tell my story in those three moments. And then I'm going to talk about the audience. You know, I'm here today at XYZ event to talk about whatever I'm there to talk about. And this is for you if. And I'm going to share at least three situations the people in the audience can find themselves in. And while I'm doing that, I'm going to be surveying the audience because I'm going to say, when you see yourself, I want you to raise your hand. So I know that that's for you, right? So I'm going to give at least three things. This is for you ifs. And then I'm going to move into why I'm there, the problem they all have, and the solution. And I'm going to introduce to them that this solution is my proven framework and methodology that I have been using for 10 plus years and have helped 1,500 clients go through and generate $378 million in the last 10 years. And then I'm going to position, and I'm during the time that I have, I'm going to give you as much as I possibly can. And for many of you, that's going to be exactly what you need. For some of you, you're going to desire more. And I will introduce you to a resource that will help you to be able to continue to deepen your learning based on what we're starting to talk about today. Does that sound good? And that resource doesn't have to be something that's paid. It could be, you know, because you also need to make sure you generate leads. So it could be a freebie that you're giving away. It could be an opportunity to get on the calendar with a member of your sales team. It's a resource. So, but that, you know, is a quick diatribe of what that needs to look like. The second thing that I would say that is the most important that you do is that you do, in fact, lead gen. My personal recommendation is that you do a text to, and you can do that a couple of ways. You can put a QR code on your slide. They click on it. And when they click on it, it opens up their text in their phone. So that, and the reason I want you to do that is because I want you to get their phone number in addition to their name and email, because then you have everything you need to have in order to market to them. And then the third thing that you need to do is you need to demonstrate your expertise. It's not enough just to talk at them for 25, 45, 65 minutes. You have to demonstrate that you can take what you just taught and make it real in the world for them. And there's a myriad of different ways you can do that. You can do that through showing client case studies of people that you've done this with, or you can pull someone out the audience. And this is only for those of you who are good on your feet and you can literally write on the spot, make them over. Now, if you do those things, even if you're not selling, when you're done, you will have what I call a groupie line. People will be waiting on the side to talk to you when you come down off the stage. And that's where your money is. Your money is in your groupie line.
Where did all this stem from for you? Like, where in your life did you make the decision that I'm going to be successful? I'm going to make money. I'm going to have a positive outlook on life and business, and I won't help others.
It all started when I was 10. I was blessed to have a fifth grade teacher named Mrs. Dixon. And at that time in my life, just to give you a little backstory, my mom had just went to jail and we had just went to live with my dad and my stepmom. And my stepmom wished that we weren't there. And so I was, you know, I was feeling a little pissed off. Now, at 10, I probably wouldn't have called it that, but I'm 48, right? And Miss Dixon, she saw my promise and my potential, and she refused to allow me to let my anger upset my promise and potential. And so she gave me a journal And she told me every time I got angry to write about it. And so within about 2 weeks, not only had I had filled that journal, but it was a cathartic experience. And I realized that there are power in the words, power in the words we speak over ourselves, power in the words that we speak to other people. And if we use the right words, we could change people's lives. And that was when I realized my purpose, that my purpose is, in fact, to use words to change the lives of people. Even as people are listening to this interview right now and they're listening to the way that I speak and the words that I use, like you'll notice that there is something unique and different about what I say and the cadence with which I say it and how it intersects with who you are and what steps you want to take. And so I recognized that very, very young. I also simultaneously, both of my parents were addicts. My dad was a functional crack addict until the day he died. And I looked at what was going on around me and we were far from rich. Now, we probably technically would have been middle class because my dad had a really good job, but he smoked all of his extra money. So we were poor. And I remember very.
He was getting money only, just doing crack every day still?
Not every day. Every weekend, though. I've never been controlled by a substance. Right. So I don't get it personally, but
it's kind of that he was able to like stop.
Yeah, he never hit rock bottom. He never lost anything major, which I mean, that's a testament into itself. But yeah, his whole life. And I just remember being really young saying, I'm going to be rich. I didn't know how, I didn't know when, I didn't know why, but I just remember saying, I am going to be rich.
Where did you grow up?
Where did I grow up? In Wilmington, Delaware.
Oh, that's right. Yep. That's right. Yeah.
And I went through so many things with money. Like, I mean, you name it, I've been through it. I've experienced everything. And I know today I experienced all of those things because a big part of my gift is helping people to normalize wealth and access to money, right? Regardless of whether you come from money or not, money is a taboo subject that most people don't even want to touch with a 10-foot pole. They don't want to talk about it. And that impacts the way that they relate to it, right? We're all in a relationship with money. And for many of us, we're in a thin line between love and hate relationship instead of a loving, fulfilled, you know, all of my desires are met kind of relationship. And until we learn how to flip the switch, again, regardless of whether we come from money or not, money becomes a thing that is stigmatized and not normalized. And so it creates a lot of disruption and dissension when it was actually designed to create flow and ease. And so I recognize that. And over time, you know, as I made this decision, as I was young, started to live into that. And so, you know, today I am blessed. I'm worth eight figures. I run this multiple million-dollar company. I am wealthy by every stretch of the imagination. I'm the first millionaire in my family. And I made the decision. And then I think you decide, you know, Emerson has this quote, whatever you decide, the universe will conspire to bring it to you, right? Tate. And I do believe that there's a lot of truth in that. And even as the universe is conspiring to bring it to you, there's still also actions you have to take, right? You have to do your part, right? The Bible says faith without works is dead. So I can believe all day long. I can have faith and I'm going to be rich. But if I'm not really completing works that get me closer to the state of rich, I'm probably not going to be rich. It's a pipe dream. And so there's that line of understanding. And sometimes the action isn't effort. It's not hard work. It's embodiment and understanding, right? I was a millionaire way before I actually had assets that valued $1 million because I started to think, act, and reason as if that was already my reality so that I could trick my subconscious mind into speeding up the amount of time it would take for it to happen. So
where do you like to, outside of like investing in yourself, and investing into the business and hiring new team members and marketing and all that, where do you prefer to invest your money? Is it real estate? Is it into digital assets like cryptocurrency and Bitcoin, the stock market?
Yeah, I have a little bit of everything. I mean, I have everything. So I think it varies. It depends on what's going on. You know, I have a good amount of real estate. And the reason why real estate was one of those things is because, you know, as I started looking at the people who are really wealthy, one of the things they all had in common is that they had real estate. And so I was like, oh, well, I got to get some real estate. And so every house I've ever bought, I've kept it. Like, it's, you know, it's just been a thing. Like, make enough to be able to move on to the next place and turn this into an investment property. So that, because I actively work, but I actually don't have to actively work for money. I actively work because I love what I do. And I love helping people get to a place where they can change their reality. But I don't have to actively work because I have so much from an investment portfolio standpoint that all of my needs are exceeded through the value of my investments.
What's the number one money mistake that you've made in your journey?
The number one money mistake that I made was trying to buy love and affection. It caused me, or it made me get to the point where I had $250,000 in credit card debt and ultimately had to file bankruptcy.
What do you mean you were trying to buy love and affection?
Yeah, like, you're my friend, Tyler, and you're having a bad month, and you're like, hey, DJ, that's what my friends call me. Can you pay my electric bill this month? It's $1,400. Or I want to go to Jamaica for the weekend and you can't afford to go. And we also want our other friend to go. I'll just put it all on my credit card. Stuff like that. Like, it wasn't even that I was buying Gucci and Prada. Like, I didn't have a lot of tangible assets or things to show for $250,000 in credit card debt. But yeah, it was trying to be loved. And you know, I can give you the whole reason why, because I've done my work and I'm very aware. But I think you heard me mention at 8, my mom went to jail. Right. Well, what I didn't mention is that her house was raided during my 8th birthday party. And so that created abandonment issues. And the thing that I wanted more than anything to know that I was loved and I mattered. I felt like it was somehow my fault that she was taken to jail. You know, you're a child. The way you think and reason isn't always rational. Right. And so I wanted to be loved at all costs and to be in position to give people things, especially when you come from an environment where you don't have those things. Right. I mean, for Christmas, every year for Christmas, I didn't get any, even as a child into young adulthood, I didn't get the things that I wanted. I got the things that I needed, like socks and underwear and pajamas and school clothes. And so when you get to the point where, I remember the first credit card in college, one of my dorm mates was like, oh, I love credit cards. It's layaway you get to take home. Well, Tyler, listen, I knew all about layaway. And you mean I could get it now and pay you $15 a month and I could have this thing? Oh, that was a paradigm I was down for because I was financially illiterate like many of us are. Because even when you come from money, if your parents don't teach you about money, you go out and you make bad decisions with money, right? And I went to school on a full academic scholarship. But I graduated with enough credit card debt to have had student loans because no one told me and I didn't know. And I thought just making the minimum payment was all you needed to do. I mean, it's a function of the society and our country and what they want and all the things, when we don't have to go super deep on that. But that was the biggest mistake I ever made with money. And I'm grateful that when I filed bankruptcy, the bankruptcy trustee required that I take a financial literacy course because that changed my life. Within 3 years, I was a millionaire. I just had the knowledge, right? I changed my situation when I got the knowledge. It's not, knowledge is not power. Applied knowledge is power. And so I took the knowledge I got from that literacy course and I applied it to the tune of becoming a millionaire in liquid assets. So not even like my home and those fixed assets adding up to $1 million, but through liquid, through investing, through, you know, in the stock market. Anyway, it was the biggest mistake that I made, but it was also the biggest defining moment I've ever experienced in my life.
That's incredible. And appreciate you sharing that. For me, I believe that when it comes to money, it's understanding what money is, which is debt and credit. And that's essentially what you're saying. Most people have a bad relationship with debt or credit cards because they're buying liabilities, they're buying things or experiences that, sure, now more than ever, you can maybe go on a cool trip and document it and get clients that way by building a brand or influence online. But ultimately, it's using that credit, using that debt, using that money to buy assets to create cash flow. Or like you said as well, it's getting information and then applying that information, which ultimately becomes knowledge, and knowledge is power. But for you, what was like the one thing that you learned? For me, again, it was more like understanding the foundational system around money, which was credit, personal credit, business credit, how to leverage credit to accumulate assets. For you, what was that like one thing that helped you kind of shift things in the right direction from a financial literacy standpoint?
So as a part of the answer to that, I actually, money is not credit or debt. That's actually not what money is. Money is transactional currency. It is most used as credit or debt. And so what you have to understand is, you know, when we think about the classes, right? So we have poor people, right? Poor class. I don't know if that's the class, but the people who don't have, right? And then we have middle class, and then we have wealthy people. So poor people believe that money is used just to pay their bills. Middle class people believe what you just said, that money is to pay their bills on time so that they have good credit, so that they can extend their access to things based on their credit. But wealthy people understand that money is a transactional energy, and it's to be used to create more money. So that is probably the biggest lesson that I learned. And in learning that, I also learned that, yes, you need to understand the foundation. You need to understand the banking system. You need to understand how it all works. You need to understand how money moves and what it means and what the numbers tell you. All of that combined is what you need to understand. But the most important thing you need to understand is that as a creator, we're all creators, you can make money move whenever you want. You're not subject to the system of credit or debit, because as an entrepreneur, you can create money. Like, so there never has to be this, it's expensive, I can't afford that, that's not in the budget. That's middle class or poor class thinking. Wealthy people never say that, because wealthy people know that they can go and create money for whatever it is that they're desiring at that point in time. Because if you can solve a problem, the universal law of business says, find a group of people who have the problem you solve that are ready right now to pay for a solution to that problem. That's the universal law of business. We can look across every industry, every type of business. They are solving a problem for which people are giving them money. They are exchanging transactional energy in exchange for a solution. So when you understand that, you can always create money whenever you want. So there is no more, I gotta do this, or I can't do this, or I need credit. Wealthy people don't need credit. Now, that doesn't mean they don't use it, because they also understand the power of using other people's money in order to extend their wealth, but they don't need credit in order to experience the things that it is. And so once I understood that, and understanding the neuroscience and the metaphysics of money, once I understood that, the switch flipped in my mind. And I stopped looking at money as just a mechanism to pay my bills. And I started to look at my power and my energy to create more of it. And so I started to create assets that I could leverage in exchange for money to be given to me to create my wealth. So that was the biggest change that happened.
And then now we have Elon Musk that's going to put the Neuralink in. He's going to shut that part of our brain off.
He's going to attempt, for those who will let him.
Yeah, that's so true, right? It's, you know, wealthy people ask questions. They say, how do I afford this? How do I buy this? How do I expand this? Whereas average people, they say statements. They say, I can't afford this. This is not within the budget, right? That's the biggest piece most people recognize from a mindset standpoint, from a foundation standpoint of success and money and business and growth and whatnot, right? Is like, how do we do these things, or why are we not able? It's asking questions, right? So love to hear that. And one thing you said earlier was power in the words, right? So from early on, you've been writing this book, right? From by journaling, by working on your message, reflecting, and being able to be patient, you know, patient in the process of all this. But you had brought up faith. Is that something that you have found to be impactful is being faithful. And where did that come from?
So 100%. And normally when I first start an interview, you know, the first question is like, tell everybody who you are, right? And you didn't ask that question, which I appreciate. So I didn't get this to say that, but I am a God girl. I'm unapologetic about my faith. I believe that businesses that have a spiritual foundation go farther faster. And, you know, as a country, our money says in God we trust, right? So we're not agnostic to principles and understanding the role that faith plays. And I want you to notice that I am purposely not using the word religion. Religion is a system that was created by man to almost enslave. Like it's a form of bondage in a lot of ways, right? But I do believe, and I do believe that my spiritual nature, because I believe we're all spiritual beings having a human experience, and being open and expressive of that is a prime indicator of my success. I believe that when I define spirituality, I define it as relationship with the creator. I define it as understanding the principles of alignment, surrender, embodiment, forgiveness, and obedience. I define it as being in tune with the purpose of your life and operating at all times in accordance to a belief that there is a power, a force, for me it is God, that is greater than you, that moves through you, and that allows you to be able to show up and transform the lives of others. And because of that guiding force and those beliefs that I hold and the way that I move through the world, I do not succumb to or experience many of the things that a lot of people experience. My faith has always been a guiding light. It wasn't always prevalent in my work, right? It's been about 10, 11 years that I've been forthcoming about my faith, and that, you know, I integrate spiritual principles with business growth strategy, that we meet at the intersection of faith and business. And what I find is being bold about that and bringing that with me in every space that I am is actually rewarded and celebrated and not ostracized, or like no one has ever asked me to leave, right? I quote the Bible like you would quote Think and Grow Rich. It's a text like any other text. The stories that are in there, the scenarios that are in there are just like if I want to refer to how to win friends and influence people, right? And because I don't make it a big deal, that means you're somehow less of a person because I am using this particular passage in the Bible as my supporting text to make this point. It's not a big deal. Like, I think there are people who, you know, I say it, I feel like I say it almost every interview. Damn you, Fannie Lou Hamer. And that is the woman who said, let us not let there be prayer in school anymore. And as a society, government yielded to that and began to separate, right? That was the separation of church and state. And there are so many people who are so afraid. But here's the thing. Politicians, they get up on those platforms and they say all the things they're going to do for us and what's going to happen when they get elected. And when they finish their speech, you know what they say at the end, Tyler? They say, and God bless America. Like our money says in God we trust. So what that tells me is that as a society, we are not unfamiliar with God, and to recognize the need for the integration thereof creates more freedom and liberty for those who choose to have faith and exercise their faith. I don't pass a collection plate. I don't hold a call. I don't, you know, not talk to you if you don't believe what I believe, but I can share my beliefs in a way that if for no other reason, it gives you the opportunity to explore your own beliefs to see whether or not that could be the missing link as to why you're not where you desire to be and what you're not experiencing. I know for me, my relationship with God is everything, and I'm so grateful to have this relationship alignment and connection with him. I'm so grateful that he moves through me and that through his spirit, I'm able to do work that is transforming lives and generations. And that's me. And it's okay if that's not you. It doesn't make me look at you any differently. It doesn't make me, you know, side eye or throw you shade. I can still honor and celebrate the human that you are because I recognize the value in your creation as much as I recognize the value in my own.
One of my big breakthroughs, which was funny, is I was, just like going through my journey of faith, and I would say something which I thought was like profound, right? And buddies of mine that are basically experts in the Bible, they're like, oh yeah, that's, John 1:14.
Right.
What the fuck? I thought I came up with that. I thought that was me. What? No. That's really what I've discovered in the last year or so, is just how much wisdom is in the Bible and in the Word.
Yeah.
And it makes you kind of laugh because like principles that, I've built my mindset around, or coincidentally, I'm actually in the process of finishing up my first book.
Mm-hmm. Congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you. I appreciate it. You know how much time and work and energy goes into it.
Yeah,
you know,
I do.
But it's funny because, it almost, at least what I've experienced, is like almost like, I don't know if imposter syndrome is like the best way to put it. But you'll say something, you're like, oh, wait, this is in the Bible. Am I trying to like copy what's in the Bible? But no, I have my own experience in my own life, which you can't debate, because it's a real story that I'm sharing. It's just the principle. And all these principles that I'm discovering, it's all in the Bible. Like all the is there.
Everything is in the Bible, right? I mean, there are people who say Bible stands for basic instructions before leaving Earth, right? Everything is in there, which it's the perfect text to use to support any statement or argument or any belief. And I love that you use the word principles, right? I talk about that all the time. I believe God is principled, and I believe that those who follow the principles get the rewards that are associated with the principles. Like, and it's important to say that, because when you look at things like The Secret, which is all Bible, but without using the scripture references, and people are, amazed and, admonished, like they just can't believe that out of nowhere these things came from. No, these things have been in the Bible. And what I like about understanding the principles is that it really removes the divide that religion tends to create. Right? Because religion says, if you don't believe what I believe and you don't call yourself a this, then we are not the same and you cannot experience what the rewards that I can experience. That is actually contrary to God and his purposes. And so I'm not really big for religion. I'm all about relationship and understanding God and, his Holy Spirit and all of how that integrates in the world that we're in today, and how to leverage the instructions that he's given us, the lessons that he teaches us. Like I talk and quote the Bible every chance I get. And especially because, most favorite thing to talk about is money. I love talking about money. And I love talking about money. And so did the Bible. The Bible mentions money, wealth, and possessions 2,300 times. And it even tells you, if you have money, how you need to act with that money so that you get to experience everything that God desires for you to experience, right? There are a lot of religious people who believe, because Christianity especially is rooted in Catholicism, that it is better to be poor in order to be considered holy. And so there are a lot of people that are struggling with that dichotomy of, but if I'm going to love God, then I can't have money. But actually, you can have money and you can have lots of it. And I could tell you where in the Bible it says it's okay, right? Every, all of the major stories, all of the people whose stories we reference, they were wealthy. They were not poor. You know what I mean? So I love being able to be in a place where I can talk about the role that spirituality plays, not only in my own life and in my business and in the work for what I do, and introduce it a lot of times to other people in a way that allows them to consider how this might work if they integrated this into their own life and in their own business.
Out of the 2,300 times that the Bible mentions money, wealth, possessions, what would you say is the one that sticks out to you the most that you like when it comes to money that's mentioned in?
There's probably two specifically. Ecclesiastes 10 and 19, money answereth all things.
Money answers all things?
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean to you?
For almost anything that's going on, we can relate it to money.
No.
Like, there is not one day that every single person doesn't have to make multiple decisions around money. I get up, I turn on my lights. I'm going to get a bill for my electricity. I decide I want to take the shower, I turn on my water. I'm going to get a bill for my water. I go get in my car, I see that I need gas, I'm going to have to go put gas in my car. That's going to require money. I'm hungry and I didn't bring my lunch. If I brought my lunch, it's because I went to the grocery store and gave them money and they gave me food. And if I buy lunch, I'm going to have to give money. Like, we make money decisions all day, every day. Money answer for all things. So that's probably the first. And then the second is in Proverbs 10 and 22. The Lord maketh man rich and add no sorrow to it. So that means you can have wealth, you can have money, and it doesn't have to be hard. You don't have to hustle and grind. It doesn't have to be painful. It doesn't have to be all of those things. And I could go on and on. We could talk about 1 Timothy, which is where for the love of money is the root of all evil is, that people get all jacked up. Or we could talk about 1 Timothy 6 and 17, where Paul gives Timothy the instructions to give to the rich people, because in Timothy's territory, there were lots of rich people. And so he says, when you are wealthy, these are your three commands. Number one, don't be arrogant or high-minded. Number two, do good deeds. And number three, remember the source of your wealth. So you can have money if you aren't arrogant and high-minded, you do good deeds, and you remember where that wealth came from. And everything came from God. He's the creator of all things. So anyway, you just got me all jazzed up because it's my favorite topic.
And that's really the foundation of the show, All for Nothing, because at the end of the day, most people, in my opinion, are doing all these things in our life for nothing. It's things that they're not passionate about. They're clocking in, clocking out, whether they are a business owner or not a business owner, or they have a job and side hustles. Most people are just doing a bunch of things for no reason. They have nothing to show for it, right? They're living paycheck to paycheck. They use all their retirement money to pay for medical expenses when it's all said and done. They have nothing to pass on. Or they do have generational wealth, but most of the time, within the second generation,
it's gone. About
it's all gone, right? Or maybe you have a bunch of money, you don't pass it on, and it goes back to God or goes through probate, whatever,
right?
It may
goes
be
to the estate, or yeah, to the government, yeah, through probate.
That's my principle around the show, is ensuring that I myself, the guest, the audience, is not doing this all for nothing. In your journey of life so far, what would you say is the number one thing that you do on a consistent basis to ensure that you're not doing this all for nothing?
Yeah, I constantly check in and I do what I call the purpose check. And I said a moment ago, I love talking about money. I do, but I don't chase it. And I think a lot of people are chasing money. I am, as my good friend and client Patrice Washington says, I am chasing purpose, right? I am making sure that when it's all said and done, I think the quote that summarizes it the best is an Irma Bombeck quote. She says, when I stand before God at the end of my life, I hope not to have a single bit of talent left saying I used everything you gave me. My mission every single day is about using everything he gave me and putting it out there in ways that it doesn't fall flat in the lives that I sold it into, that it really does create something for them. Our clients are often the first, right? They're the first person to leave their good job and become an entrepreneur. They're the first to build a business to high six or seven figures. They're the first to become a millionaire in their family. And they're able to do that, at least in part, through the guidance, insight, consulting, and coaching support that my company lends to them. And every day I'm checking into that, right? I'm making sure that I'm more focused on being of service to other people in pursuit of my purpose than anything else. Because I believe, and I believe it was Jim Rohn who said it, right? Like, if you help people get what they want, you're going to get what you want. If I focus on showing up and serving, there is no way in the world that God would have me out here transforming lives, leading people to understand his principles and operating in them so that they experience massive shifts in their lives and I not be experiencing the wealth and abundance as well. And so that's my driving force. And that is why I do it. And I do it because I know that that's why I was created. That's why I'm here.
Yeah. And you had a bad experience with money by being a professional people pleaser.
And I did.
A professional servant.
I absolutely did. Yeah. And I, you know, I know everything I went through with money. And that's just one of the stories, probably the most cataclysmic, but there are tons of things I went through. I know I went through all of those things because the anointing on my life is for money and to help people to normalize money and access to it. And if I hadn't experienced what people experience in everyday life, how could I speak to how to get to the other side if I haven't been through it, right? It would be theory. The theory doesn't transform, is it?
Yeah.
Right? It has to be, like you said earlier, you know, I didn't realize I was using these Bible stories or these Bible scriptures. It was my own experience because you lived it. It ain't theory if you lived it, Tyler. And so because I lived it, I can actually help them to navigate the holes and the pitfalls and avoid some of the mistakes that I made because I actually went through it and there is no theory in it. And so I'm actually grateful for everything that I experienced as it pertained to money. Now, I might not have been grateful when it happened, but as I look now, every quote unquote failure wasn't failure. It was feedback. It was an opportunity to take a loss into a learning so that I could prevent either myself in the future or someone else at the time that we connect from experiencing something that would delay or derail their path to their destiny.
Yeah, and that's it right there. Most people are theorists in life.
Absolutely.
They're the ones that will read the books, they'll listen to the podcast shows, whereas what you're encouraging people is to become a practitioner.
Absolutely.
Right? Ones that are actually taking that information. And information is only information. It's not knowledge until it's applied. So becoming a theorist is one thing, but actually becoming a practitioner, taking that information and doing something with it, taking action on that is how you become knowledgeable. And that's how you can become powerful. And whatever power means to you, fill in the blank, as long as it's ideally within good intentions and not from a negative place of control, let's say negative control, then life will be, you know, pretty good for you. At least we've discovered great. So, well, hey, it's been great to have you on the show. Thank you so much for your patience of getting this to go.
Yeah, absolutely.
I was excited for this and you definitely knocked this out of the park. So I appreciate it. What would you say is something that most people don't know about you that you would like to share?
Most people don't know about me, unless you know me, that I am an introvert. I am gifted. I am obedient. So I operate in my gift and my gift is big. So typically when they see me on a stage or on a podcast, they see me fully expressed in my gift. But when I am not, so when I'm not on, there's no need for me to be on. I am introspective. I am close to the vest. I have a very small circle. The people that I trust is an intimate circle of people because I know that I have this big gift that I have to steward in the world. And so most people are, when they learn that, they're really surprised. They're like, really? You're such a personality. It's the gift, right? And because doing this work is so important, I'm willing to sacrifice my level of comfort in order to fulfill the mandate that is on my gift.
And you say introvert as in you just need, you know, a lot of effective time by yourself, right? Whether it's reflecting,
yeah,
thinking, reading, meditating, praying, whatever it may be.
I'm not the life of the party. I don't have to be the life of the party. You know, when I go into places, you don't even have to know that I'm there. Like, I'm fine. If I go somewhere and I'm like in a corner, I'm totally fine. Now, everyone else is uncomfortable because they want me to be in conversation and talking to people. But I'm like, no, I'm good. So, and it's, you know, a time and a space for everything. But I do spend a lot of time really introspectively reflecting, meditating, praying, journaling, really processing and stewarding the gift. And I do that not just for myself, but also for the clients that I serve. I want to be a really clear vessel and conduit as I'm working with them to help them to experience what it is that they are most wanting versus it being my vessel being cloudy so that I can't support them and show up for them fully and be fully present.
And as we I usually do this like every show. I feel like I'll be like, all right, we're going to wrap this up. And I have like 18 more questions. But you have an event coming up. I know what it's like to host events. It's a lot of time, energy, effort, like most things in life and business. If you want it to go well and make a big impact, you have an event coming up in May.
I do.
Is that the first event that you've put on? What are those events entail? Like what's the hub?
So I've been doing events since 2009. I don't even know what number event this is of the total number of events. This particular event is called Move to Millions. This is our third time doing Move to Millions. It's a 3-day or 3.5-day if you're a VIP attendee. It's a money mindset, spiritual alignment, and business growth incubator for million-dollar CEOs and million-dollar CEOs in the making. Over 3 days, we get into the assets, principles, and the legacy of making millions of dollars. The people who attend the event are, you know, entrepreneurs and small business owners who desire to get to millions. And we spend time working on and working through the money blocks and the money beliefs that are preventing their millions from flowing easily and gracefully into their life and in their business so that they can create space. So it is experiential. It is dynamic. It's probably like nothing you've ever experienced. I don't bring in a whole lot of other outside speakers. I have a few carefully selected speakers that really underscore because I use the time to teach from our framework and methodology so that the people can leave complete. I find that when you attend events that have a whole bunch of different speakers, you're getting this disjointed strategy, right? You're getting this disjointed insight. You have to find the pieces that are going to work for you instead of getting access to a whole system. And I said this, I believe, earlier in the interview, you don't rise to the level of your goals. You rise to the level of your systems. So I want to do a complete work and teach them a system that as they implement and continue to draw from and access the system, it produces a result for them. And so that's one of the things that makes my events different. It is highly experiential, meaning you're not just listening to me talk at you for 3 days. You're actually up, you're moving your body, you're experimenting with concepts and literally doing the work in the room so that you are transformed. I tell people to bring their helmet and shoulder pads because the only thing that will be the same when they leave is their name.
I love it. And when is that and where is that?
It's May 22nd through the 24th. It's happening just outside of Washington, D.C. in Herndon, Virginia. And to learn more and to get your ticket, you can go to movetomillions.com.
Boom. And is that how people connect with you? Is it best to go there where your social media accounts are?
Everything is right there on movetomillions.com. You'll be able to access everything.
Amazing. Dr. Harmon, quite the pleasure to have you on.
Thank you.
And if I'm going to stay connected, if you need anything on my end, obviously reach out. Any last wise words to share before we wrap this up?
I just want to say thank you. Thank you to you. I loved all of the questions. I love when we just flow. And so it felt really, really good. And I just believe this is going to serve people in the best possible way. And the last thing I'll say to all of you out there, especially in the grain of all for nothing, if you did not come from millions, millions should come from you.
That's how we wrap it up right there. Mic drop.
Yeah.